The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average finally breaks 20,000. Trump policies are signed into law fast and furiously. GDP disappoints for the quarter. And we have a special guest and acceptance speech this week. All this and much more on episode number 494 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, Andrew Horowitz here. This is the Disciplined Investor Podcast, where we come to you each and every week to discuss things about finance, investing, maybe a little bit of policy issues, the government, geopolitics around the world, of course, is a topic that we discuss quite often, as well as some ideas on investing. It's the end of January already, 2017, episode number 494, which means we're almost to 500 episodes. We've been doing this since about 2008. And along the way, I've had some wonderful guests, some people that have really helped to educate us and bring us some information that helps us with our investing profitability, as well as some education ideas and just some interesting anecdotes along the way. So thank you all for listening. For those of you that are new, just tuning in, you can follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the Twitter handle. And of course, all the information about the show, the notes, the information, some of the links about our guests, etc., along the way are on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can visit there regularly. You can also actually sign up for to be on the mailing list, where you'll get a weekly and a daily update of what's happening. But to get the fastest information, clearly Twitter is one of the ways to get it. Oh, we have a few things to talk about today. A lot of things have happened over the last week. I think before we go on, I have to mention that if you don't know, and if you do know, we do a show each and every week on Tuesdays called DH Unplugged. The D is for John C. Dvorak, the H for Horowitz. And we talk about things in a bit of a different light, not just the information we hear on the news and react to it, but more of an unwinding and a decompression of some of the news items and how to actually profit on those. Some of them are on the lighter side of investing and on business and on finance, on the world. Some crazy stories we bring up here and there. We have some games that we play as well. DHUnplugged.com this week, like we did the first time last week, is going to be streaming live 9 p.m. Eastern time at DH Unplugged. There's a little link on the right-hand side you'll click. If you're looking at mobile, it should be there on the, just find where it says streaming live now with a little green light. Click that. This week, we're going to be adding a chat room for our listeners. So if you do want to participate throughout the show and talk with us and the listeners to find out what's going on and maybe correct us or add something to the discussion, you can do so, because now not only are we streaming starting at 9 p.m., but we're also going to be having a live chat. And I really wish you to join us and help us along with that effort, because it's going to be the next generation of this. Because on DH Unplugged, we not only talk about the news and some of the things that are going on and some of the important items, but also have a variety of listener games that we play. We have the closest to the pin competition that's going on right now for Facebook, where whoever gets the closest to the actual closing price of a stock that we have elected for that particular period will get a prize. And we also have the old codgers versus the millennials portfolio. And we also do a variety of other very interesting things along the way, like the weekly stock picks, where we come up with some ideas. Now, those stock picks have been doing pretty well recently. The latest round, anywhere from Barclays that we chose about 6 months ago, up 57%, to some of the uranium picks that we put on there as well. We go short, we go long. It's a game. You can follow along. All on DH Unplugged, DHUnplugged.com. Oh, okay. With that out of the way, I think we should probably talk about some of the things that we saw last week in terms of economics, because we have been in a market environment recently that has been built upon anticipation and expectation, some hope, some thoughts that, well, we're going to see some regulatory reform, a reduction in the overall regulatory environment. And we've been promised that we're going to see some tax reform, possibly a tax cut as low as maybe 20% for corporations and some reductions for you and me also as an individual. So there's a lot of things that are going on right now that markets are on the uptrend track for. And that is, again, based on a lot of anticipation of some of this. And if any of the recent speed at which the Trump administration has been putting forth their efforts to provide executive orders on actions such as, what do we have, renegotiation of NAFTA, we're out of the TPP, the walls going up, immigration reform, lots of other things that have gone on just in the first week, just in the first week of his administration. That's pretty cool. Now, how all that will play out, whether there's going to be some fighting, Supreme Court involvement, I don't know where this is going, but it's at a breakneck pace already. And we have to then look at, and I think markets are looking at, well, if he did say it and he's moving so fast on these things, well, tax reform, regulatory reform is going to be just as quick. And a lot of that is actually going to be very beneficial for markets. Think about it for a second. If you have a company, and we ran a list. Let me see if I have that here. Yeah, hang on a second. It's on the other side of the desk. We have a list that we ran, or a screen, I should say, that looks at a great listing of companies. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to see what their effective tax rate was. And these stocks, we narrowed it down to those have reasonable volume, growing EPS or earnings per share from continuing operations on a year-over-year basis based on their quarterly reports. And same thing with revenue. And a market cap of at least, I think it's $5 billion. Now, we ran this list and we came up with a couple of hundred names of companies because we wanted to rank them in their effective tax rate to find out, well, if in fact we have a company that's earning money that has a reasonable amount of volume, you know, it's something that's trading out there, and it's also been earning and growing its earnings and growing its revenue over time, and it has a high tax rate, what will be the potential for this company if, in fact, tax rates are reduced? That makes sense? So we want to find those with the highest tax rates. And then I backed into it, well, what has its performance been since the election? So some of the names on the list, for example, we have Quanta Services with an effective tax rate of 44%. Now, how do you get to that 44%? That's their effective tax rate that we got from our system that calculated all the net earnings and taxes that were put into the play and what they're reporting as their effective tax rate. Now, some of these may be higher than the total tax rate. There may be some additional things like foreign taxes and things that are put into this. But basically, we have Aetna, Avis, Olin, NiSource, Regal Entertainment, United Healthcare, right at about the 40 or above level. Amazon.com comes in at 39.93%. Now, you wonder, well, why has Amazon been doing so well recently? You know, up about 11% since the election. Not one of the best performers, but still doing pretty well. Well, if in fact we do see this tax reduction on corporations and it brings them down, what's going to end up happening? We'll see margin expansion right off the bat. Immediately, we'll see margin expansion because what's going to happen is we'll see that with lower taxes, the snap of a finger, once that goes into effect, if it goes into effect, but once it goes into effect, these stocks are going to have much more earnings drop to the bottom line. So this is pretty cool. We looked at this, and for the most part, a few stocks are not doing so well. CVS Healthcare with a 38% tax rate, for whatever reason, they got some internal issues going on there. But for the most part, we're seeing that stocks are up anywhere from about 5 to 50%. The number one highest tax rate company, Quanta Services, on this list that we prepared, which is symbol PWR, is up 33% since the election. Now, that has something to do with probably the industry they're in as well, of course. So same thing with Olin, symbol OLN is up 25%. But these guys have had significant growth over the last several quarters. And I think that will continue if, in fact, there is some tax relief. DSW has a 39% tax rate. I'll put this up next week. I'll put this up. Watch thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And I'll put this list up with some analysis of what's going on with that. But I think that it's very interesting to start looking at these kind of factors when it comes to the outward look on markets. Now, overall, stocks in general, if there is a tax cut, will do very well. And some of that's priced in right now. As a matter of fact, a lot of it's probably priced in right now. At the same time, if you have regulatory reform, that's what's happening with the banks. The banks are hoping for a tax cut. They're hoping for a widening yield curve and regulatory reform. Small caps, what's going on there? Why are they just rallying like crazy? Well, the regulatory environment right now is probably the least kind to small businesses. And when you talk about reducing the regulatory hurdles for businesses, the one thing you have to keep in mind is, well, it makes sense that small caps will do well. Those are the ones, by the way, that can move and groove and change and re-engineer their businesses the best to take advantage of things like cuts in taxes and regulatory reform and changes in the overall environment when it comes to the economy. So that's what's going on there. Just a little bit of a kind of a review of what's going on right now with markets and why we saw that the Dow Jones Industrial Average broke through 20,000 again after consolidating for about 2 to 3 weeks. It was a large move after the election, a little bit of consolidation for the next few weeks, and then broke through in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ all hit records last week. Now, was some of that due to economics? Maybe, maybe not. Yields backed up a little bit. The dollar came in from its highs. Some of the economic numbers we saw were not what I would say very exciting. We saw that the MBA mortgage applications came in about 4% higher. We saw that initial claims were at 259, continuing claims at 2.1 million. Leading indicators came in right on where they were expected to be. New home sales were light. Except, as a matter of fact, they were exceptionally light. That didn't seem to bother the home builders that were on a tear last week. Now, GDP, the advanced GDP number came in at 1.9%. They were looking for anywhere about 2.2 to 2.5%. And we wouldn't expect, and we've talked about this, you don't expect that we're going to see any kind of massive change in the GDP numbers because of a new president or any of his potential plans or changes in tax code or changes in infrastructure spending, because none of that has been actually implemented as of yet. It's going to take about a year to get a lot of that kind of flowing through the economy. And that's only once it's actually been implemented. So think about that. Durable goods orders came in very, very disappointing. A lot of that had to do, there was a great article I was looking at, that GDP came in light and durable goods and all that. There was a discussion about soybeans. That soybeans, the exports of soybeans were really off this quarter. And that really was the hurting part of why and the difficulty when we saw what happened with GDP coming in only at 1.9%. Prior was 3.5, don't forget. So the big change was soybeans. This is the one thing that's throwing things off, soybeans. Now, some of that could have been due to the high dollar, the very high levels that we saw the end of last quarter and into the beginning of this quarter. And clearly the November, December period for the dollar. So maybe it had to do with some of the exports and the pricing of that. But durable goods overall came in at negative 0.4%. Estimates were for like 4%. Now, when you strip out transportation, estimates were about 0.6, 0.5. It came in right on 0.5. Last period, the durable goods orders came in at 1% on the upside. Now, meanwhile, durable goods were low again before. And the hope was there was going to be a big change. And all of a sudden, a lot of disappointment there. Next week, we have coming up a variety of things. Probably one of the most important issues coming up next week is at the end of the week, because we're going to start a new month and we have the jobs numbers that are going to be coming out. Where are the expectations? Pretty much where we've been. I don't think that any of the euphoria like we've seen with regard to sentiment, with the Michigan sentiment final now at 98.5, the highest it's been in years. Consumer sentiment is up. Industrial sentiment is up. Investor sentiment is up. Global sentiment is generally up. And the outward, the component that is probably the most moved over the last several weeks, several months, in fact, has been the expectations index. That's the outward look. You know, what's happening in the future? Where are we going? What's going to be? You know, what I think is going to happen in the next number of months. That's the one that's really been moving. And that's the one that will get a lot of people to look at, well, if I'm a business, do I want to start thinking about adding employees? Do I want to start thinking about capital expenditures and expansion? Do I want to think about maybe getting some lines of credit in line because manufacturing is going to pick up? This is where they start thinking about all this and saying, you know, maybe now is the time to start getting things organized to a point that I'm going to start growing this business, because I think that in the future, things are going to be a lot rosier than they are today. So, you know, when we look at that, you have to get where the tire meets the road. You know, right now we're kind of out there on the starting gate. We think that things are going to go well, but we're not going to ramp, you know, we're revving up the car, but we're not moving it down the track yet. That'll happen if, in fact, all these pieces of the puzzle come into play. All right, so that's what's happening next week. Let's talk about last week for a second. One other point. There was a lot. Ooh, we got a lot of comments and feedback on last week's show with Harry Dent. Harry Dent is obviously very controversial. He makes some very bold predictions. If you haven't listened to that episode, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and check it out. But, you know, he's talking about a major cataclysmic market event that will be happening very shortly and clearly into the second part of 2017. Talks about how gold is going to just blow out and, you know, crude oil down to $10 and maybe a 40 or 50% drop in market prices and valuation, and a lot of pretty substantial doomsday type of prognostications. And a lot of people came back and said, you know what, he's talked about this a lot and none of them have come true. Some things, you know, he said have panned out pretty well over the years and his economic models are pretty good. The problem is, and this is what I want to bring up, that there's not always a correlation between things like sentiment and economics and the markets. There's not always a very tight correlation to the whole notion of what's happening on an economic basis in the US or the world and what's happening with markets. Now, this is something that's changed over the years. It used to be a pretty solid correlation looking at how economics are trending, where they're going, and what is going to be the outward look for equities, for revenues for companies. But ever since 2008, 2009, when the Fed has been so active, providing an incredible amount of liquidity in the markets, these things have changed. So many of you who are out there are saying, well, you know what? I believe that the comments from Harry Dent are correct. And when I think about what happened the show before that with shadow stats and how the employment situation is much worse than it is and how we've seen that there has been a very lackluster recovery in terms of GDP. And even though it's maybe better than it was, it's still not great. And as I go through these numbers, and even if we do see a slowdown in manufacturing and maybe the manufacturing numbers, the ISM service and non-service indices and the regionals start to fall back, well, why isn't the markets falling back? We saw a really ugly number when it came to new housing starts. Maybe it was just a one-month aberration. But again, what if that trend continues and markets just seem to be, well, okay with it? Why is that? Remember something. That as we have a significant amount of liquidity and essentially a safety net that has been put there as a backstop by the Fed, by central banks around the world that are just pumping in all sorts of money into the systems. And even if it isn't a direct injection into stocks like Japan does or China, even if it's not a direct injection to the economy, like we'll see if in fact there is a gigantic infrastructure spend, like China does, like Trump is talking about doing, President Trump is talking about doing, what is happening is that there's leakage. There's leakage from all of the bond buying, the low rates. There's a lot of leverage being put on. There's a lot of things that are going on behind the scenes, and this is intentional. So if you're sitting there going, wow, you know what? Why are markets at these levels, whatever the level that you're looking at, and you say it doesn't make sense and all that? Well, it may. Think about the times that when things are bad and markets don't react. Think about when things are really good and markets fall off. What is going on? It has to do with this incredible amount of liquidity and the backstop that is assumed that is being put on by the Fed. Now, as we do see more fiscal spending that comes into play, as we see more fiscal laws coming in that will change things like taxes and regulation, the Fed will lose some of its, and a good amount probably, of its overall power. Because what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to keep up with the current situation, raise rates to avoid incredible inflation, which is, of course, one of their mandates, supposed mandates. And what they'll have to do from there is have to keep things in pace, and they'll become less relevant in that maybe they'll even, and there's been some discussion about this that has been circulating recently about slowing down and even ending their reinvestment program with the quantitative easing. Remember, they're not actually going and adding more money to buy bonds from anywhere other than their current reinvestment of principal and interest that comes due on a regular basis. Still amounts to about $15 to $20 billion a month, which is no small change, by the way. But they're still doing this to try to keep rates level and to make sure that their book is protected of their $4 trillion of bonds that they owned at this point. So when we look at this, remember that it's not just as simple as looking at just the current and near-term economics. Now, if things do get bad, I do think, let's kind of make this scenario up. Let's say that Harry Dent is right, that, you know what, we're going to see that big bubble is going to burst in China and there's going to be all sorts of problems in Europe. The whole situation in Europe is going to start falling apart more than it has been lately for one reason or the other. The central banks now, what are they going to do? Well, they may wait and see to see what happens with economics. And if economics, let's just make the assumption that it starts to roll over and we start to see some manufacturing getting ugly and the unemployment rate starts rising and all of a sudden there's a lot more layoffs and all the things that have been of late doing well. Well, what do you expect the central banks are going to do then, even if we have a lower tax rate and we have regulatory reform and we have infrastructure spending? What do you think the central banks will do? They'll push more liquidity into the markets, won't they? They'll do something like increase their quantitative easing regimen. They may lower rates. And this is the story of our markets today. Essentially, it's a centrally managed market to continue with the process of, just to make sure that the wealth effect maintains the thought that the more money people have in their 401ks and their savings plans and their investments, the better they will be as spenders and consumers. That's really what's going on these days. I mean, it's really much simple as that, that the central bank is involved in a central planning process that our markets need to stay up or at least reasonably up. And then from there, we know that bad news is good news. Good news is good news. So there's really no negative side of the markets. I mean, is it that simple? Is it going to last like that forever? Well, no. Do I think that could last forever? No. There'll be something and there'll be a cycle. Every time we think that, well, the economic cycle from peak to trough and the oversight, you know, the move to the upside where things get in an expansive mode that is just incredible to the downside, the trough, where we're in a contraction mode that never is anything going to get better and, oh my God, this is awful, has ended? That whole cycle has ended? No, it's just been changed for the time being. Maybe it's been muted. Maybe the ups and the downs, the peaks and the troughs have been, the amplitude of those has been compressed a bit. Maybe we've elongated the cycles. Now that we've seen that a market cycle can go on in a tremendous bull run for an extended period of time, even with lackluster domestic demand and with, I would say, tepid GDP. And that has been predicated on this whole notion that there is a significant amount of, what would we call it? A significant amount of backing. Well, maybe it's just an elongation. So just think about that next time you think about why is this happening? Why is that happening? Why does it seem everything is opposite? Again, it's just a change in the cycle right now. But I will tell you something, that cycles tend to repeat themselves. Now, whether Harry Dent is right or not, that there'll be a major market correction towards the middle to the latter half of 2017 that should be starting any day now, I can't tell you. What I can tell you is between all of the buybacks and the re-engineering and all that, I mean, you know, you're going to see this go on for some time. So anyway, there was plenty of feedback. If you do want to ask a question or give me feedback on the show, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click on the Ask Andrew button and you will find out more about that. When we come back from our guest and we have a very special award and a moment in time that we have a very special guest coming on to accept and provide a bit of a commentary on this special occasion. When we come back from that, I want to talk about some of the things that are going on with regard to a couple of stocks, one particular stock in general when it comes to, one specific stock to talk about when it comes to this whole Mexican wall and what's going on with Mexico. And a couple other things that I think you'll find of interest, but with this, the thought that there's going to be this trade war when it comes to NAFTA, when it comes to the wall and this whole goings on with Mexico and the US, you know, there's a variety of stocks that have been hit. One of them I kind of started to look at, and I think there's some interesting levels that we can talk about. We'll get to that right after we get to our special guest today. As we know, the Dow Jones Industrial Average hit 20,000 this week, a record number that people were looking for some period of time, and the excitement surrounding that. And it was all sorts of, well, hats on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange and all sorts of, you know, buzzers went off and bells were ringing. And I thought, well, this is a wonderful occasion because it seems that everybody else seems that way. Well, okay, fine. Well, I thought what we'd do is congratulate on this occasion, this great height and level for the Dow Jones Industrial Average, reaching 20,000 points, 20,000 level. We'd bring on none other than the Dow Jones Industrial Average itself to accept the award for reaching this milestone, for reaching the level of 20,000. Without further ado, the award ceremony is starting. Let's listen in right now to the acceptance speech for the Dow Jones Industrial Average reaching 20,000.
Thank you. Thank you. This is huge. It is an honor to reach this historic level, something that I've looked forward to for a very long time. Of course, reaching this point was not only from my efforts. It was a result of many people, companies, governments, and algo programs that pushed tirelessly to get me here. Let me start with thanking my parents, to whom I owe my entire existence. Charles Dow and Edward Jones. I was born of their wisdom on May 26th, 1896, and since then have been seeing many changes within my makeup. In my early years, I was all about industry. Yes, I have changed with the times. I am humbled, and even though my prominence has been challenged over the years, I am still considered viable. I would be remiss if I did not mention some of the real heroes that have helped me be the focus of hats and regalia of this day. My executive producers and others that have provided funding over the past decade, Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen. I am fortunate to have been able to team up with some of the smartest people in the business, and they've had unlimited pockets and have been tireless in their promotion. Yes, they've had help. Assisting them was a team of aggressive central banks around the world that have all got on board with the Dow Jones Industrial 20K project since 2009. Many companies have been instrumental in reaching this breakthrough moment. As an example, IBM will be forever in my heart as they continue to, well, buy back shares with the gracious funding from my producers, even as they struggle to bring in more revenue to their own company due to a continual slowdown in their core business. They have sacrificed the quality of their earnings for this movement. By all means, the WISE team at S&P Dow Jones has done an amazing job of adding companies outside of the original intended makeup as times have changed. One of the best moves was back in 2013 when their decision was made to remove Hewlett-Packard, Alcoa, and Bank of America. These were all lower-priced securities that would have had less of an impact than their replacements, Nike, Visa, and Goldman Sachs. Undoubtedly, the move in 2015 to replace lower-priced AT&T and Apple was seen as a way to bump up my price over time. Some of my recent success has to be credited to those financial companies popularizing passive strategies. Investors have been, well, they've been lulled into a sense that set it and forget it is the wave of the future. Over the past decade, the idea that any market correction is simply a short-term discount on equities and ETFs have gained immense popularity. Bravo to the marketing teams at iShares, BlackRock, Vanguard, just to name a few. To put it mildly, I am overwhelmed, and thank you for getting me here. Thank you for believing in me. Thank you for staying with me in times when many would have just thrown in the towel. Now to my marketing and social media team at CNBC, your commitment to me day in and day out is extraordinary. Even when it looks as if there may be some bumps in the road, you have a way of crafting a message that is upbeat and positive. When times are grim, you seem to always get the right guests on the show to explain the bullish side of the story. Thank you for keeping those analysts with downbeat messages to a minimum. I don't know how you keep all those plates spinning all the time, but great work, gang. To my brother, the S&P 500, I know you can make the move to 5,000 over the next few years. My sister, NASDAQ, is well on her way to even more lofty heights. My son, Russell 2000, is following in my footsteps, and that is all one could ask for. Last but not least, there is a great debt of gratitude I owe Jeremy Siegel for always pushing the idea that there is more room to run, even though you have perpetually been uber bullish. I want to grant you a pardon for missing all corrections along the way. You were right in the end. Thank you again, and hoping to see you at the next big moment.
Well, there you go. Just a little fun there. Just a little snarkiness, a little fun about the 20,000, which I don't know. Does it really make any difference if it's 20,000 or 21,000? We all like round numbers. You know, I talked about this so many times in the past, and I'll bring it up again because I think it is very important to think about the whole idea of round numbers. Now, so many times I talk to people and, I think there's somebody watching me. When I put in my stops, I'm always taken out. How is that? How is it that I say, well, I bought the stock at $25 and I'm willing to take this down to about $23.50. And magically, somehow I put in the stop at $23.50 and it's taken out. And I go on to explain one of the things is that you have to be careful about round numbers because they have a psychological importance to many people. You think that over a certain number, a round number is important, and the traders that are on the other side of the trade know that. What you want to do is when you place your stops, and in the same scenario we talked about, maybe you want to place your stops at, well, let's say, instead of, again, just a number 2350, maybe you look at something like 2342. Now, that may not be a big deal, and that still may be taken out. Maybe you want to set it at 2356. But the thing is that when you have these round numbers like 23, 24, 2350, 25, these round numbers take on a life of their own, such as has been the case with the Dow Jones Industrial Average 20,000. Yeah, it's something for the media to celebrate. It's fun. You know, but how did we get there? Why do we get there? Why is it hitting that number? That's another story entirely. But when you're looking at levels like this, a lot of times you'll see support levels will start to form along these very round numbers, particularly when you look at indices, when you look at futures, when you look at stocks. And be careful that when you set your stops or when you set your buy levels, they are rightly above or below a round number. Always stay away from those round numbers and maybe you'll be less likely to get hit on a stop. But anyway, we thought we'd have a little fun with the Dow Jones 20,000. Again, a little tongue-in-cheek. You know, hopefully the bulls and the bears that are listening out there take this with a little bit of humor that we intended that to be. And if not, well, too bad. Sorry, we tried. Let's talk about something I mentioned before we got to our special guest here today. let's talk a little bit about the whole idea of what's going on with markets, first of all. You know, there is a lot of confusion about what is going to be put into play. We talked about that a minute ago with regard to economics and what's happening with regard to the lack of correlation between the economics and the maybe the stocks and maybe earnings and stocks. And maybe there is some correlation. But again, what people are thinking is going on. Why are stocks moving up? You know, are we going to continue higher? Are we not? Is it time that things are topped off right now? I think it's interesting to note that when there are times when we get to a point that may be a turning point for markets, people get concerned, they get worried, they're looking at, hey, maybe there's another alternative to what I'm doing right now with my portfolio, whatever that is. And you know how I know that? Because they flow through very quickly in terms of interest in the TDIMG managed growth, you know, TDI managed growth strategy, which is a combination of a fundamentally based strategy, a screening process, as well as a technical process. So we call it the Quanta Funda Techna. We use quantitative analysis to find stocks using screens. We use fundamental analysis to look under the hood. And then we go and look at some technicals. And each of these things, we even use an algorithmic process in part of that portfolio to provide diversification. Well, listeners, you know about this. People know about this. And I think that because we go short and because we use options, because we hedge, all of a sudden you see a flood of interest in the last couple of weeks probably the last 3 weeks, all through January, I'll say. And not just because it's a new year. I think it's because people are very concerned of what's going on with markets. And you have to wonder to yourself, well, what am I going to do if, you know, things change in the markets? Hey, so far, I've been surfing this wave pretty well. Well, what if that wave crests and breaks? Well, that's what we have, our TDI, or the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. That's how we invest for clients. And if you want more information, there's a brand new video, a virtual tour, if you will, of the basics of the strategy that is available on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You go over to the site, you scroll down a little bit, and there's about five different strategies and different things that we do, from our technical indicators that we write and the algorithms that we put up for TradeStation. If you're an active trader with TradeStation, you can get these at the Trading App Store, and the Arrow strategy, the new Investology that's coming soon. We have the back end, I would say 99.9% completed now. We're just doing some testing on the back end, and the front end will be put together, and then we'll let you know about that. The Arrow strategy, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, and our global allocations. If you're interested in any of those, check them out on the Disciplined Investor, because if it is time that all of a sudden there is a change in the market environment, maybe it won't just start very quickly, but maybe it'll be a slow process. You don't want to be caught just doing the same old, right? So we added this as a diversifying position for people so they can get the opportunity to have a different kind of a different alpha-based portfolio strategy for the TDIMG. The Arrow with algorithmic trading, which will be in the market long, which it is currently. It will be out or neutral in cash, or it will be short the markets. All these are available over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. All right. I mentioned also there's a stock I was looking at. And it's symbol CVGW. Calavo Growers. This is an avocado company. Well, they do other things too, but a lot of what they do is avocados. And avocados are very popular, a popular fruit slash vegetable. I guess it depends on... If a tomato is a vegetable or fruit, avocado is a fruit or vegetable. It has a pit, so I suppose it's a fruit. And but avocados have become very popular, as has salsa and all the other Mexican condiments. And the problem you're having right now is that this stock is down about 20% from its high. Now, I looked at what's going on with this, and I was, you know, I knew basically it had to do something with this whole Mexico issue and the peso and what's going on with the wall and Trump and Mexico and blah. So I looked into this and I looked at their annual reports, their 10Qs. I want to see really some other details about what they're doing in terms of their manufacturing, their farms, their distribution. It looks like they have two or three major facilities in Mexico. Now, obviously, they did so over the years, not only for the farming, but for the low cost of the production of avocados and the distribution of avocados throughout the world from their Mexican facilities. I further looked at, well, what happens in terms of, over the years, how much of their revenue is associated to their Mexican operations versus their American or U.S.-based operations? And they have, you know, it goes back and forth, but basically they've shifted a bunch of their operations over to Mexico over the last number of years. Now, again, much of that may be cost factors. It could also be because of the crop and the growing conditions there. A lot of the other farms they have are in California, and a lot of their facilities are in California. They have some throughout the world, some distribution points in Florida and Arizona and around the country, but they have a tremendous amount. Last year was about a 3-to-1 ratio of revenues that were derived from Mexico versus the U.S. And there's been years where it's been 2-to-1 or maybe even closer to 60-40 Mexico versus United States. So a lot of that is a problem right now, because if they are in fact growing and then manufacturing or, creating guacamole or whatever they're doing with their avocados, or even just shipping them back to the U.S. And if you have a change to NAFTA and if you have a change to the border tax and all that, that could be a big problem for this company, unless somehow magically prices go up and they can benefit there, which is a problem. Because they have some fixed costs that I saw involved in their production And if they have a higher cost factor for them, which is not being able to be passed off to the consumer, it may be a problem because this fixed cost situation will eat into their margins. And I think that's an area where it's weighing on the share price. So I looked at this and I kind of looked at, okay, well, they've really done a great job in terms of revenue growth over the years. And we've seen they've managed their earnings and their margins very well, really a top tier stock. And yes, for avocados, but a good stock overall. I would say it's a quality growth name. Now it's down about 20% from its high. So I put some technical analysis into play here, and it looks like that there is a support point on their weekly chart right about where it is now. Currently trading at about $54. Actually, it's about 50. Let's see the exact number. Hang on. It's currently trading at 55.65. All right, that's where it closed. 55.65. So, where's the next level? Well, right now, again, at about 55 and a quarter, I would say, is where the weekly support is. But there's some downstroke levels also on the way on the downside here. If, in fact, there is a continuation of this talk about border tax, and if there is a continuation about NAFTA being renegotiated, and somehow if this falls in there and they can't bring their production over the U.S. at the same pricing, and if their growing is so, if they have such an incredible amount of dispersion in terms of the U.S. versus the Mexican revenue streams, and they can't change it up, and there's going to be taxes, et cetera. Well, there could be some further downside for this stock. The extra cost will weigh on the expenditures of this company, and that's a problem. 51. I looked at the weekly, I looked at the daily, I looked at a variety of different levels, I looked at a long-term chart. 51 seems to be like a reasonable number. Well, we're talking about another, 8 or 9% down. This stock will be down about 30% from its high if, in fact, there is this continual worry and the company doesn't come into any the ability to figure out how to change things. If they are unable to figure out how to either pass on the cost to the consumer or totally avoid this extra cost factors that may be coming up with regard to their Mexican operations, or they can't sell their Mexican products, their avocados, et cetera, and some of the other things that they have, tomatoes, to the rest of the world in a very advanced way without, because, you know, if they don't have a border tax for the rest of the world. So there's a big problem. Now, who knows? What is this going to do? Maybe they'll have a facility in, take another country, that's not Mexico. Maybe they'll ship them to Canada somehow and then sell them back to the U.S. that way. I don't know. Anything's possible. But this whole thing about Mexico right now is really weighing on shares of a great company with a great product that's in demand. That I don't think the demand will, unless we become, we're anti-American, you know, kill the avocado. I mean, if we become a nationalistic, crazy company that's, you know, anything, salsa, kill tacos, kill avocados. No, we don't want these anymore. We're eating only American, you know, grilled cheese and hamburgers, no avocado. So, you know, that if we start to get to that level, well, there's a big problem. But the taste right now for avocado is still high for a lot of reasons. You know, it's a quality food. It's good fat versus bad fat and all this other good stuff that we know about with avocados. So to keep this on your radar, definitely around the 51 and a quarter range. I'll say that there's a convergence of the weekly and the daily. Very important levels that have been, I would consider, good support levels from a volume and price and time basis. 51 and a quarter. Right now, you may see a bounce on this level here. Again, the peso bounced a little bit on Friday after the discussion renewed with the Mexican president and Trump after there was kind of a cutoff. So keep a lot and watch on Calavo Growers, CVGW. CVGW, just one of those out there. You got to look at Constellation Brands, also STZ. This is an importer of beers from Mexico. They've been hit, not as hard, I would say, but still there's some confusion there about what's going to be, any tariffs that will be put on the company as well. So keep that in mind. All right, what else do we have? All right, so look for employment coming up this week. Keep Calavo Growers on your radar. Avocados. Keep that on your radar at 51 and a quarter. Put an alert there somehow. And of course, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and check out all the different strategies that are available for you. Maybe it is about time. And finally, just a reminder, two things. Ask Andrew over on The Disciplined Investor. You have questions, you have comments. If you want to say a few things, maybe that we will have the opportunity to put on the 500th episode coming up, what you like about the show, what some of the highlights, some of the things you like, some of the favorite guests and all. I'd love to hear it. You can just click on Ask Andrew on The Disciplined Investor and put your commentary there as well. That would be awesome. I'd really like that for the 500th show. And finally, DH Unplugged this week is going to be live and streaming with a listener chat room. Go over to DH Unplugged, 9 p.m. on Tuesday evenings, every Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern time, dhunplugged.com. Thanks for joining me. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next week with some great guests, some great people, some great ideas, and hopefully some great stock ideas and profitability points as well. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.